Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been in, well, this is my, I think my, either my fourth or fifth city that I've been in since the last time we were together. So I think it's easier for me to know where you are today than where I, no, I'm in San Francisco. The traveling microphone is plugged into San Francisco today. For some reason, I've always wanted to say that. And I'm delighted to be back in the good old USA. I came back literally for the 4th of July, about which more in a moment. But just to be in a country where when you are looking to dry your hands in the, as they call it in Britain, in the loo, in the restroom, in the convenience, you don't have to risk placing them between the sides of an infernal machine that has taken over the United Kingdom called the Blade, the Dyson Blade. I'm sure Mr. Dyson is a wonderful man and a very clever inventor. But you're told, if you want to dry your hands, increasingly everywhere in, at least in London, to place your hands between the sides of this machine and just place them straight down into it. And it's called the Blade. And for some reason, people found it odd that I had apprehensions about doing that, that, you know, I might pull back bloody stumps after inserting them in the Blade. I don't know why. There it is. So glad to be in the bladeless place. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you don't know me. I barely know me, but you know something about me. And I think if you do, and you do, you know that the news story that caught my attention this week had nothing to do with a woman in Florida. Didn't see a minute of it. It's local news. You know what? I'm sorry. It's local news. And as the Washington Post pointed out in an article this week, if the victim in that case had been of a slightly different color, you would never have heard of her name. But anyway, that wasn't the story that transfixed me. You know the story that's been transfixing me. It involves a certain media mogul and his minions across the sea and paying off police and hacking into the voicemail of a murdered girl and possibly the voicemails of parents of soldiers who died in Iraq and Afghanistan, stuff that even made the tabloid-reading public in Britain go, ugh. Now, I would like to say that my decades-long relationship with another wing of that organization, in which I've been paid far more than I deserve, treated with kid gloves, sensitivity, care and concern, nurturing and support, have hopelessly compromised me on the subject of this brewing scandal involving the News Corporation. I would like to say that, but unfortunately, accuracy compels me to say that ain't true. Hello, welcome to the show.
My whole Saturday and Sunday, too. I was thinking about ways not to lose. Lay down my weapons is what I've done. But too late to hide, feet too soft to run. But people say I'm the luckiest man. And yeah, they say running is useless. Fighting is foolish. You're not gonna win, but still you're the luckiest man. You're up against too many horses and mysterious forces. What you don't know is you are the luckiest man. You're the luckiest man.
don't talk to the devil when he calls my name. But sometimes when I'm losing, it all seems the same. And when I fall, I'm back up again, just to slip on the same mistakes and slide right back in. But people say I'm the luckiest man. Yeah, they say running is useless and fighting is foolish. You're not gonna win, but still you're the luckiest man. You're up against too many horses and mysterious forces. What you don't know is you are the luckiest man. You're the luckiest man. Try to keep my faith and keep my mind. I hate to lose either one when the whip cracks behind. And I can't help but mourning just a little each night. People say everything's gonna be alright. They say I'm the luckiest man. Yeah, they say running is useless, fighting is foolish. You're not gonna win, but still you're the luckiest man. You're up against too many horses and mysterious forces. What you don't know is you are the luckiest man. You're the luckiest man. You're the luckiest man.
From San Francisco, California, from the School on the Hill. See what I did there? I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Speaking of the 4th of July, yes, I was privileged to enjoy the fireworks over the Mississippi River in New Orleans, Louisiana, on the 4th of July with some friends. And it wouldn't even have occurred to me to say this until I read the following story, but those fireworks over the Mississippi River in New Orleans with the Mississippi River Bridge glowing in the background, they were real. It was all real. Now, on the other hand, this, Boston's 4th of July celebration was on CBS. Viewers watched as fireworks exploded behind the State House, Quincy Market, Fenway Park's home plate, and other beloved Boston landmarks. The only problem was the fireworks display was fake. Viewers began to point out to the Boston Globe the day after that the display CBS broadcast included views that were geographically impossible. Says the fireworks display was launched from a bridge in the Charles River in the direction away from those landmarks, you see. David Mugar, the Boston-based executive producer of the show for the last 9 years, has confirmed now that the footage had been, for the first time ever, altered. Mugar said the network's actions were justified because the show wasn't news, just entertainment. Absolutely, we're proud to show scenes from our city, he told the Boston Globe. It's often only shown in film or in sporting matches. Sporting matches? That doesn't sound like an American to me. Games, Dave, is what we call them. Sporting matches. Well, now you know. We were able to highlight great places in Boston, historical places with direct ties to the 4th, so we think it was a good thing. He insisted adding footage of the landmark shot weeks ago to the fireworks display was no different than the TV producer of Boston Legal using scenes from Boston, even though the show was shot in Hollywood. Boston natives weren't too pleased. Nearly 80% of those who read the Globe story said it bothered them that CBS faked portions of the show, said one reader. The fireworks don't need dressing up. They're fireworks. Said with typical Boston piff. Ladies and gentlemen, you may have missed this story. Adolf Hitler is now formally persona non grata in the town of his birth, the town council in the Austrian village of Braunau, has unanimously decided to withdraw honorary citizenship from Hitler 78 years after the Nazi dictator was given the title. Hitler was born, actually, in the tiny city of Ranshofen, next to Braunau, and became an honorary city of that hamlet. It's a hamlet. At least it's not an Othello. In 1933, but Ranshofen became part of Braunau a few years later and thus is universally recognized as Hitler's birthplace. So that'll teach him, if he's listening. And the quote of the week, I think, comes from a story, a science story, about discovery. I think this was on the BBC's website. The discovery, a really clever experiment trying to figure out, and when you hear the question being asked, you'll think, really? People spent money on this? The question being examined was the point of sex. Wait, they're talking evolutionarily, and the question is why, at certain point in evolution, creatures, things, life forms, who had up until that time reproduced asexually, discovered this other thing going on, or mutated to find it, or did whatever, or, you know, God pointed a finger, whatever you like. So they did a cute little experiment and found, at least at this point, that they bred two strains of worms. Ugh. Two strains of worms, one that reproduced sexually and one that reproduced asexually, and then put them both in an environment where there were parasitic bacteria. And the worms that were sexually reproduced were more successful in surviving and attacks by these parasites. And their theory is that's why this whole thing evolved. But the quote that summed up the story, I think, makes the quote of the week. One of the scientists said, quote, "The co-evolutionary struggle between hosts and their parasites could explain the existence of males." So, if you're ever wondering, now you know. And now,
clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie, you like it here in San Francisco?
Love it.
All right, Addie, the Atom is with us because these are Tales of the Atom. Clean, safe, too cheap to meet her, ladies and gentlemen. Tales of our adventures with the Atom. Dateline Tokyo. That's scary enough right now in that context. A former nuclear advisor to Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan blasted the government's handling of the crisis, predicts more revelations of radiation threats to the public in the coming months. In his first media interview since resigning his post in protest in April, Toshiso Kosako, one of the country's leading experts on radiation safety, said Kan's government has been slow to test for dangers in the sea and to fish, and has understated certain radiation threats to minimize cleanup costs. Kosako's role while in the government was to advise the prime minister on radiation safety. Why listen to him? Kosako predicted there will be broader discoveries than the scattered reports of food contamination of tea leaves and spinach later this year, especially as rice, Japan's staple, is harvested. Poor people have to eat staples. Come the harvest season in the fall, there will be a chaos, Kosako said. Among the rice harvested, there will certainly be some radiation contamination, though I don't know at what levels, setting off a scandal. If people stop buying rice from Tohoku, we'll have a tricky problem. He also said the way the government has handled the Fukushima situation since March 11th, crippled the reactors, has exposed basic flaws in Japanese policymaking. The government's decision-making mechanism is opaque, he said. It's never clear what reasons are driving what decisions. Welcome to the club, babe. Japan's leading business journal has published an article by the Hokkaido Cancer Center director Nishio Masamichi, a radiation treatment specialist. He begins by asserting that the Fukushima disaster has caused Japan's, quote, myth of nuclear safety, unquote, to crumble. He has grave concern for the public health effects of the ongoing radiation leak. Nishio originally called for calm in the days after the accident. Now he argues that as the gravity of the situation at the plant becomes more clear, the specter of long-term radiation exposure must be reckoned with. He places blame on, among others, TEPCO executives, bureaucrats who are not able to put together an accurate body of information, a prime minister and a cabinet lacking leadership and a sense of urgency, and nuclear industry lobbyists and academic flunkies, or as they're called in Japan, Goyo Gakusha, of the government who built up the myth of nuclear safety in the first place. He says, quote, I just cannot feel any hope for Japan's future. Wow, unquote. He accuses the authorities of prioritizing their own convenience over the lives of nuclear workers, arguing that raising the exposure limit can have serious health effects. He also states reports of poor food and sleeping conditions for workers show that they are not even being treated like human beings. The helicopters that drop water on the reactors and spent fuel pools were outfitted with the types of radiation shields used in hospital X-ray rooms. He says this is akin to putting on a lead helmet in order to protect yourself from radiation from outer space. The planners, he says, did not even understand the difference between airborne radiation from a nuclear accident and radiation used in the controlled environment of hospital treatment. Referring to protective suits is a misnomer bordering on fraud in his view, since nothing can offer total protection from radiation exposure. A lack of nutrition and rest can make workers more susceptible to radiation symptoms, he says. And he accuses TEPCO of being up to old tricks of the nuclear industry, giving temporary workers broken radiation monitors, only giving them monitoring devices when they are working, despite high levels of radiation existing throughout the site, and more. Without accurate assessment of internal radiation exposure through whole-body monitoring, he argues, there is no way to tell how much exposure workers are actually suffering. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, he thinks things are swell. Remember the story a couple of weeks ago on this broadcast about jellyfish clogging the filtration systems that affect the cooling systems of nuclear plants? Sure you do. Well, there's more. First of all, there's this. A nuclear power plant on the coast of Israel was forced to shut down this week when its seawater cooling system became clogged with jellyfish. A similar incident temporarily disabled two nuclear reactors at the Torness power station on the Scottish coast last week, amid speculation that warm waters and ocean acidification, both driven by climate change, are boosting jellyfish populations. Are these three incidents signs of a growing trend? They certainly could be coincidental, says a jellyfish biologist and senior marine scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab off the Gulf Coast of Alabama, Monty Graham. He said there have been dozens of cases of jellyfish causing partial or complete shutdowns of coastal power plants in the past few decades, as well as desalination plants. Only when you have a huge influx of jellies do they overwhelm the flumes. Jellyfish blooming occurs mostly in the spring and summer months, which mainly may explain why the three recent power plant incidents happened in close succession. But 4 years ago, right now, Science Daily printed a piece saying that there is a booming population of jellyfish. Jellyfish populations have surged worldwide, a phenomenon variously attributed to global warming or artificial reefs built along coastlines. So a couple of Japanese scientists came up with a process for extracting high yields of a protein substance called mucin that could be used as a starting material for production of designer mucins. Mucins found in jellyfish. Or let's eat them. Mmm. Peanut butter and Dateline Paris, France raised the possibility for the first time this week of pulling out of nuclear power. France. Although its energy minister stressed this was just one of many scenarios, not the one favored by the government. country launched a study on Friday of the country's energy mix, with options including a complete exit from nuclear production, a cut in the share of nuclear to 50% from its present approximately 80, and a progressive reduction of total electricity production in France. Why don't you harness crickets? Can't stop them from rubbing their legs together. We will study all possible scenarios for what we call the energy mix, he said. An energy ministry official told Reuters one scenario would consider a total exit from nuclear by 2050 or even 2040. Germany, of course, in May said it would withdraw completely from nuclear energy production by 2022. A poll last month showed 3/4 of the French people interviewed wanted to withdraw from nuclear energy. But that's just a poll. The Perry nuclear power plant's managers over in Perry, Ohio, near Cleveland, did just about everything wrong when they sent 4 workers into a small room under the reactors to retrieve a radiation monitor stuck in the reactor's core, federal regulators said this week. The workers who were exposed to high levels of radiation in the incident were given the wrong work instructions for the job, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said. They used equipment that did not meet industry standards and worked in an area with wires, cables, and railings that could have gotten in the way of a quick escape that also involved climbing up a ladder. The incident occurred during a refueling shutdown. There was an open, unbarricaded, unguarded hole in the floor that was a nominal 6 foot deep, 36 inches long by 34 inches wide, and several trip hazards also were present at the work site. No one was injured or received a radiation overdose. The NRC inspection team argues workers were just lucky. Like us all, I guess. But wait, there's more. A scandal in which Kyushu Electric Power Company tried to make local residents in Japan appear supportive of restarting the utility's nuclear reactors by having staff send emails during a government-sponsored event has been brought to light by an in-house whistleblower. A member of the Saga Prefectural Assembly said a senior official in the government knew just before the event that the utility was plotting such a scheme but did nothing to prevent it. That assembly member said she obtained a written document containing the contents of the email sent by a Kyushu Electric employee to others. The employee asked people to post comments supporting the resumption of the reactors to win over locals. She obtained the document from a whistleblower in an affiliate of the utility. The government failed to verify the document or the emails by asking the utility. Kyushu Electric chairman Shingo Matsuo admitted that a former vice president of the company was directly involved in the incident. Company sources now say the scandal involved a former senior executive officer in charge of nuclear power. Nice people doing nice things. Tokyo Electric Power said this week it will pay an estimated additional compensation of up to $590 million or about $3,600 per nuclear accident evacuee as the second round of compensation payments to accident evacuees. It said it will disclose the impact of extra compensation on its earnings, blah, blah, blah. It's cheap as well as safe. How long will it take to clean up Fukushima? Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan said it will take decades. To clean it up and to decommission the crippled plant. His comments mark the first time that Japan's government has offered a time frame for the cleanup beyond the emergency measures. It will take, this is a quote, it will take 3, 5, 10 years, or eventually several decades to take care of the incident. Can we quote you on that, sir? Quote, it will take 3, 5, 10 years, or eventually several decades to take care of the incident. Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan. That's some 60,000 evacuees. But who's counting? Apparently not the Prime Minister of Japan. Once a top engineer in the nation's nuclear weapons cleanup program in this country, Walter Tomositis has been relegated to a basement storage room equipped with cardboard box and plywood furniture and nothing to do for the last year. His bosses sent him there when he persisted in raising concerns about risks at the Energy Department's project to deal with millions of gallons of radioactive waste near Hanford, Washington, including the potential for hydrogen gas explosions. Walt is killing us, said Bechtel's top manager at the project in an email to his boss, Tom Osaitis' boss, urging that the engineer be brought under control. Now an independent government watchdog agency, the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board, has backed up the whistleblower and issued a rebuke to the Energy Secretary, Stephen Chu, concluding that the safety culture at the $12.3 billion Hanford cleanup project is flawed and that significant risks exist in the plant's design. The conclusion came after a nearly year-long investigation which took testimony from 45 witnesses and reviewed 30,000 documents. It confirmed that Tamositis had been, quote, abruptly removed from the project when he raised technical questions about its design and that the actions against him had frightened other engineers. The board finds that expression of technical dissent affecting safety were discouraged, if not opposed or rejected, without review, says the safety board chairman. The Energy Department issued an anodyne statement in response. Special inspectors sent by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are evaluating degraded equipment at Okoni Nuclear Station's standby shutdown facility. This is intended for use when regular and emergency reactor cooling systems aren't available. A backup to a backup. That's near Greenville. The NRC spokesman says it does not appear to be a serious safety issue based on our initial analysis. He says degraded is a nuclear plant term used when equipment doesn't perform perfectly every time. It may be slow. It may work two times out of three, he said. It means you couldn't be 100% sure it would work when you needed it. He says that to be reassuring. That's in a nuclear plant, ladies and gentlemen. That's reassurance, you see. But wait, there's more. I think there's more. It's buzzing. That must mean there's more. Yeah. Same plant. Pre-prepared guidelines in the event of a Fukushima-level disaster were not kept in critical horseshoe areas of control rooms at Okoni, and two of three copies in the technical support center were outdated. That's also from the NRC's inspection of that power station. But, you know, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap. Isn't it, Addie?
Now you've depressed me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nuclear power, ladies and gentlemen, our friend in what used to be the space age.
Cafe's closing, grab your coat and maybe we can follow where the evening's going. Night's upon us, don't you wanna see how this will end? I'll watch the sunrise, reflected in your eyes. It's crazy how time flies when I'm spending holding you all night. Watch you watch the sunrise. Let my kisses fall where they belong, telling you that I've been saving up since you've been gone. It's getting cold out, let's go home now. We can light a fire that never goes out. We'll explode then afterglow until another day begins. With the sunrise reflected in your eyes, it's crazy how time flies when I spend it holding you all night. Watch you watch the sunrise.
while she watched the sunrise. Oh, oh.
Mm-hmm. Baby, 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 please don't go. Oh, you make me crazy. I've waited all day long. Sunrise. Oh, 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 for the sunrise.
See it in your eyes.
Oh, for the sunrise.
Sunrise in your eyes.
For the sunrise.
This is Le Show, focusing on people investigating themselves. We'll get to that in this half hour. Now news of AFAC. Sounds like Addie made that sound. The emergence of a single-page letter supposedly written by a senior North Korean official 13 years ago has become the strongest evidence yet, suggesting that Pakistan's top military officials were involved in the secret sale of equipment to North Korea that enabled it to begin enriching uranium. Our friend, Pakistan. The letter is said to have been written to A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani father of their bomb, by John Byung-ho, a North Korean whom U.S. intelligence has long put at the center of North Korea's trade in missile and nuclear technologies. It reports that the chief of the Pakistani army at the time, General Karamat, had been paid $3 million and asked that the agreed agreements, components, etc. be placed on a North Korean plane returning to Pyongyang, the North's capital. The publication of the letter comes, as you know, at a particularly inopportune moment for the Pakistani military. Today's New York Times reports the U.S. is pulling back on about $800 million in military aid to Pakistan, just as sort of a warning shot. If authentic, the letter seems certain to rekindle questions about whether Pakistan's most respected institution, the Army, played a key role in the proliferation of nuclear weapons technology around the world. The letter was provided by Khan, the father of the Pakistani bomb, in 2007 to a scholar who has written extensively about the Pakistani scientist who passed it on some time ago, unauthenticated, to the Washington Post, which published it this week. The Post said it could also not verify the letter, which is written in English, but its details appear consistent with events at the time. U.S. officials said this week it may well be genuine. Of course, no way to know for sure because the U.S. has never been allowed by Pakistan to interrogate or otherwise speak with A.Q. Khan. But, you know, there's always a chance, don't you think? Other news of AFPAC. You know this story probably. Osama bin Laden, had he lived much longer, was mulling changing the name of al-Qaeda. Among his options were not al-Qaeda Light. And new defense secretary, former CIA chief Leon Panetta, arrived in Afghanistan this week. Part of the new team brought in to cement relations with President Karzai. But he said something very interesting on his arrival, or on his trip. Panetta said there were, quote, suspicions but no smoking guns, indicating that Osama bin Laden's whereabouts were known prior to his capture and killing to some Pakistani officials. He says, to be sure, he's awaiting the results of an investigation. The investigation will be carried out by Pakistan's main military intelligence organization, the ISI, which has long been reported to have members, if not its highest echelon, deeply involved with both al-Qaeda and the Taliban. So just to summarize, Leon Panetta is waiting to know for sure whether Pakistani military and intelligence people knew Osama bin Laden's whereabouts. until the results of an investigation led by that very agency.
It's the hottest spot in the world, so you better keep your cool.
Okay, Mr. Taliban Bigwig. Where did you get this money?
You gave it to me.
Looks like that was the wrong answer.
You're playing for the biggest stakes around, so you better play it smart.
Well,
yep.
An Al-Qaeda hideout. Mm-hmm.
Just like our late informant friend told us.
You know something, Vince?
What's that, Chad?
I don't like the looks of this cave.
Neither do I.
It could use some drapes.
And when the stuff hits the fan, you better get another fan.
Hey, Vince, There must be some mistake. Lab report said the fingerprints on the embassy bomb were yours.
You know what that means, Chad.
Yep. Time to get a new lab.
Vince Chaudhry and Chad Ramalitsan. New breed meets old school. American know-how meets Pakistani no way. ISI Karachi, coming this fall to CBS, where it's all entertainment, except for the entertainment.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Top of the list, I guess. Top of the list to you. From the phone hacking scandal that is enveloping News Corporation in the wake of the revelations about their now-shuttered tabloid newspaper, The News of the World. Scotland Yard's Assistant Commissioner John Yates has expressed his massive regret over not reopening police inquiries into phone hacking. Despite fresh allegations emerging that thousands of public figures have been targeted, the senior detective ruled in July 2009 there was no new evidence. Speaking after this week's revelation that the mobile phone of murdered schoolgirl Millie Dowler was among those targeted, he said, "We are all extremely shocked by it, and it is a matter of massive regret we didn't deal with it earlier." Interesting choice of words. Not really sorry. Regrets. Same choice of words used by Rupert Murdoch's son, James, head of News Corporation's interests over there.
Now, you've presided over a newspaper group in which people, or people you have paid, have been hacking into the phones of missing girls, of people who've lost their loved ones. I'm just interested, how do you feel about that? How does your father feel about it? I mean, do you feel ashamed? What's your feeling about it?
I feel regret. Clearly, the practices of certain individuals did not live up to the standards and quality of journalism that we believe in and that I believe in, and that this company believes in. This company has been a great investor in journalism, a greater investor in media in general, and it's something that we believe very strongly in. And clearly, certain activities did not live up to those standards. And that's a matter of great regret for me personally and for the company.
And for your father, you've obviously talked to him about this. Is he personally ashamed of what's happened?
I think he was very clear in a comment made yesterday, actually, that, you know, these allegations are shocking and hugely regrettable. There was a particular settlement that I authorized, and I've said was made with information that was incomplete. I acted on the advice of executives and lawyers with incomplete investigation. And that's a matter of real regret for me personally. Previous to that, an investigation by the police had been conducted and the company had cooperated with that. We now know that that investigation was inadequate. And that is a matter of profound regret as well.
Getting the picture? On another subject, a World Wrestling Entertainment wrestler lost his temper during a shouting match with an Australian fan this week, but quickly owned up to being, quote, a total douche, and apologized for using anti-gay slurs. Classy all around. The United Nations Human Rights Council's Special Rapporteur on Palestinian Rights has apologized for reposting an anti-Semitic cartoon on his personal blog. That's a cute thing. Taylor Swift had to cancel her concert in Louisville, Kentucky due to illness. She felt terrible about the missed show and apologized to her fans on Twitter. She was scheduled to perform on Saturday night at the Yum Center. That's what it's called, ladies and gentlemen. You figure it out. The Yum Center. It's actually because the naming rights were sold to Yum Brands. This is the first time Swift had to cancel a concert over sickness. She apologized. Louisville, I'm so sorry to have to postpone this show. This is my first time having to do this. I'm so, so sorry. Frank Francisco fired an F-bomb at a reporter. He's a pitcher in the American League. He's a Toronto Blue Jays pitcher, as a matter of fact. He said he was mad during an interview. It's not an excuse. I know that I was wrong. He failed to record an out, though summoned to protect a 4-0 lead in the ninth. In the ninth inning, Thursday night, manager John Farrell yanked him after he gave up a single, a double, and a walk. That set the stage for a 5-run Cleveland rally capped by Travis Hafner's walk-off grand slam. After the game, reporters waited to talk to Francisco. He beckoned to one, then said, F you, and walked away, but he later apologized. And that's all for the ballpark. No, there'll be more, another baseball apology moments from now. But first, the News of the World, the tabloid newspaper in question in the whole phone hacking mess, published its last issue today, Sunday. And on the front page, they printed an apology. We praised high standards, we demanded high standards, but as we are now only too painfully aware, for a period of a few years, up to 2006, some who worked for us or in our name fell shamefully short of those standards. Quite simply, we lost our way. Phones were hacked, and for that, this newspaper is truly sorry, unquote. No apology for paying off police people, which may be the heart of the scandal. Many police officials were paid off by the News of the World to leak them information, perhaps phone numbers, perhaps other private information. And it was the police failure to investigate the scandal for which John Yates apologized that resulted in the scandal being under control until now. A month after an opposition politician made cat noises at Australian Finance Minister Penny Wong during a Senate meeting, a senior government member of parliament is being forced to apologize for the same behavior. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard this week ordered one of her own MPs, Joel Fitzgibbon, to personally say he was sorry to Deputy Opposition Leader Julie Bishop after he meowed at her during a debate on the carbon tax. Dateline Tokyo, Japan's disaster reconstruction minister Matsumoto this week apologized for making rough remarks that may have hurt the feelings of some victims of the disaster, vowed to continue helping disaster-hit areas. I felt that I was the one siding with the people affected by the disaster, but I sincerely apologize if my words came out short or rough, he said at a hastily arranged news conference after he tendered his resignation. It was triggered by a series of remarks he made which were regarded by many as arrogant, including those over the weekend, when he said he would help municipalities that come up with ideas but would not help those without them. And Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan apologized for ordering safety tests on nuclear plants weeks after his government had already determined the plants were safe. These are so-called stress tests. They've worked so well with the banks. Ireland's Minister for Health has apologized to the girl whose liver transplant operation was canceled due to his department's failure to organize transportation for her. Minister James Riley made the apology as it emerged the government jet was available to transfer the girl to London on Saturday night, but was turned down by officials. Fox News this week. Well, it's News Corp Apology Week. Fox News this week apologized for tweets sent from the network's news politics Twitter feed by hackers early in the day, which said, among other things, that President Obama had been shot and killed. Hackers sent out several malicious and false tweets. These reports are incorrect, and the president is spending the July 4th holiday with his family, Fox said. The hacking is being investigated, and FoxNews.com regrets. Doesn't apologize for any distress the false tweets may have created. Another regret. Following the Casey Anthony verdict, yeah, I heard about that. Hash tag not guilty instantly became a trending topic on Twitter, and Entenmann's Cakes made the not-so-wise decision to capitalize on that fact, tweeting, quote, who's hash not guilty about eating all the tasty treats they want? The tweet was quickly deleted, and a follow-up reads, sorry, everyone, we weren't trying to reference the trial in our tweet. We should have checked the trending hashtag first. Yes, you should. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos visited El Salado in northern Colombia this week to apologize for a massacre carried out there by paramilitary forces in 2000. CNN's division CNNGo.com has officially apologized for its recent remarks, which labeled the traditional Chinese dish century egg, also known as preserved egg, as the most revolting food. Chase Bank has issued an apology for having a customer arrested for trying to cash a Chase cashier's check at a bank branch in Auburn, Washington. Ikeno Njoku was accused of forging the check, which had been mailed to him by Chase. The customer banker, who handles large checks for the Chase branch, said the check looked fake, so he called police. Njoku was arrested and taken to jail, where he spent 4 or 5 days before Chase special investigations realized there had been a mistake and that the check was legitimate. The investigator left a voicemail for detective, but it was her day off, so no one heard the message until the following Monday. 5 days and four nights in jail, said a Chase public relations person. We apologize to Mr. Njoku and deeply regret what happened to him. We are working quickly to understand all the details so we can reach a fair resolution. Deputy Defense Minister of Taiwan Andrew Yang visited Israel's representative office in Taipei Friday to apologize for a government photograph advertising a summer battle camp that featured three students dressed in Nazi uniforms. MSNBC apologized for F-bombs aired during coverage of the Casey Anthony trial. White House, here's your next baseball apology. White House second baseman Gordon Beckham has apologized for an inappropriate remark left scrawled in the dirt at second base for friend Chris Getz, who plays second base for the Royals. It was apparently visible to some fans of the upper deck. Beckham apparently used his foot to scrawl, Getz is gay. And that's all for the ballpark. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So as you know, one of the people at the center of the phone hacking scandal, which is now a bigger scandal thanks to the paying off of police and to the cozying up to politicians in Britain with untold possible consequences to News Corp's interests, both in the United Kingdom and in this country. One of the main people involved is the head of News Corp's operations in Great Britain, Rebecca Brooks, widely reported to be a dear friend of Rupert Murdoch's, a surrogate daughter, even though he has daughters, very close to the boss. The shuttering of News of the World, a tabloid newspaper that closed today, was widely believed, or at least by a lot of the journalists, so-called, at News of the World, to be sacrificing their jobs to protect the job of Rebecca Brooks. Even the British Prime Minister, a social friend of Rebecca Brooks, has said this week he would have accepted her apology, which she apparently offered to Rupert Murdoch. She was the editor of News of the World when much of the phone hacking happened. Her excuse has been all along, she didn't know. News International, when the scandal broke this week, announced an investigation, its own investigation, happening alongside the new police investigation, the investigation to be led by Rebecca Brooks.
Is it really even vaguely?
To be led by, I say, Rebecca Brooks.
Her cases aren't cold, just clammy.
Come on, Constable. It's a simple question. What did I know?
You should know. It's you what knew it.
Nice try, Constable. Try telling it to the police.
But I am the police.
Good. Here's another 100 quid.
She's anything but undercover.
I must say you're looking ravishing tonight.
Mr. Prime Minister, I do believe you're staring down my cleavage.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What was your first clue?
And she'll stop at nothing to start something.
Please come. call us, honey, just as soon as you can.
Hmm. Where did you get this tape?
From your office.
Maybe it should take a little trip.
The tape?
No, genius. The office.
Rebecca Brooks. She's a new kind of private eye. No matter what she investigates, the clues always point in one direction. Her.
Hey, sweetie. That's why a girl has friends.
Rebecca Brooks, P.I. Coming soon to Fox.
Where else?
Ladies and gentlemen, regret is not James Murdoch's only keyword. The other one is processes or processes.
Is it really even vaguely conceivable that she and many others didn't know what was going on, that this hacking was rife everywhere?
Rebecca and I are absolutely committed, and this company is absolutely committed to doing the right thing. And what that means is about making sure that we're putting in place the processes, that we understand what happened, and we have processes in place and a process in place to actually make the thing, not to have yeah. to make sure that these things don't happen again.
I understand that, but my question was, is it really conceivable? You're asking people, you're looking people in the eye and saying, look, she and others in her position did not know. You were paying out enormous sums of money to these people, and what I'm saying is that really conceivable?
Listen, I am satisfied that Rebecca, her leadership of this business, and her standard of ethics and her standard of conduct throughout her career are very good. Recall, it's the process of information discovery that we went through proactively and voluntarily that actually started these investigations.
When Clive Goodman was arrested, what did you ask all your executives about those activities, and what did they say?
Well, the company undertook a process with the police at that time that we now know, after a very thorough process of discovery and of really opening all of that up again internally, we now know, and we've said, that that process at that time was not complete. That in fact, earlier this year, we unreservedly apologized to victims of these voicemail intercepts. We admitted and accepted liability in these civil cases. And we're now in a process with an independent former judge who's actually working through how do we deal with all of those cases.
It's the damn processes, ladies and gentlemen. If I ever get a hold of those processes, I'm going to wring their necks. And what a ringing endorsement of Rebecca Brooks' ethics. Very good. Very good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world via the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like all of us being allowed to investigate ourselves if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to the folks here at KALW San Francisco for helping to make today's program a self-investigatory dream. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this program and playlist information on the music heard here on always available at harryshearer.com. I'll be in San Rafael tonight and at San Francisco's Roxy Theater tomorrow night to host Q&A's for The Big Uneasy, and details on when and where you can see The Big Uneasy available at thebiguneasy.com. And join the more than 39,000 followers of this program online at The Harry Shearer at Twitter. Or don't. This show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. That's right. I forgot my own slogan. Goodbye.